back in the 50s and the 60s, right into the 70s, there was a big debate between anti-racist progressive people and evil reactionaries like me. The evil reactionaries like me said that the non-white countries of the world were better off under the control of white countries. We were called, of course, Nazis who wanted to kill 6 million Jews. On the other side, there were the progressives. And, of course, the political left was largely led by Jewish opinion, including the ADL, the Anti-Defamation League of Mani Breath. And these groups said that non-white countries had the right to have all the sovereignty and all the power that white countries had. All of it. That there was no reason to limit their authority or their right to have their own armies, their own navies, their own forces, all under their own direct control. We were called colonialists and imperialists. Then, around 1980, Iraq developed or was building a nuclear facility, which it said was for the generation of electrical power. And since the Middle East, particularly Iraq and Iran, are full of oil, this was somewhat suspicious. It was thought that maybe they were developing atomic weapons. What everybody instantly forgot was that all of the anti-racists, especially the UN and the United States, has been arguing for an entire generation that these former colonies, like Iraq, had every bit as much right to control all the power that the white and imperialist powers had. So Israel bombed out the nuclear facility that Iraq had, and the United States stood up and cheered. The reason for this was that Iraq was not a responsible power. It shouldn't have nuclear weapons. Nobody remembered that the whole argument for so many decades had been, are non-white countries ready to assume full power? And that means full sovereign power within their borders, and that includes building what they damn well please. Iraq had a reasonable argument that it was just developing an atomic power plant. All of the power in France, for example, is nuclear power. Our Jane Fonda's kept us from doing that. But the point is that the whole argument was whether non-white countries, former colonies, should have all of the sovereignty and power that their former masters had. And suddenly, in 1980, the positions were more or less reversed. Suddenly, suddenly all the non-racists were saying, well, yes, they should have sovereign power over their own people, and if black dictators slaughter and oppress black people, that's democracy. That's not only okay, that's what social progress is all about. But all of a sudden, when Iraq was a threat to Israel, the entire position changed. Interesting coincidence. Now, nobody worries about Britain having nuclear weapons. Nobody worries about France having nuclear weapons. At least they don't panic over it. In fact, I've been sort of thinking over the list of countries that are, quote, ready, unquote, to have nuclear powers. France, Britain, the United States. And I tried to think of a former colonial power, a former colony of France or Britain that we feel can be trusted with nuclear power. And I came to realize that today every former colonial power, every imperialist nation, has the right to have nuclear weapons, and none of their colonies has the right to have nuclear weapons. Now, we've all been trained at considerable public expense in the established religion of political correctness. We all know that if statistically you are not hiring enough blacks or enough Hispanics, you are a racist, a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. On the other hand, if it just so happens that nobody can think of a colored country that should be allowed to have nuclear weapons, that's not racism at all. I don't think nobody seems to have noticed that what we call nuclear non-proliferation sounds an awful like the old arguments for colonialism. In fact, what the left and what the anti-imperialists used to always call imperialist thinking had one big excuse, as they called it. The imperialists would say, well, yes, someday these countries, these little brown people, should have independence, but they're just not ready for it yet. And nowadays, the official line is that, yes, one of these days, these former colonies may at least have the right, as much right as we do, to have nuclear weapons, but now is not the time. They're not just ready. They're just not ready for it yet. The funny thing is that when you argue that about nuclear proliferation, nobody turns a hair. In other words, if you use the same argument about nuclear proliferation that was used about colonialism, you find that the people who are the official anti-racists are the ones who are shouting it most loudly. In fact, today, the word is that we're all terrified that some tin-pot little dictator or some madman at the head of a state will get hold of nuclear weapons. Now, Are we talking about the, say, the Prime Minister of Sweden? No. Anybody who has a picture of that tin pot little dictator always has the picture of someone who is either Oriental or colored or black. In fact, no one would be particularly, they wouldn't like it, but nobody would be particularly panicked if any of the former colonial powers got hold or had had nuclear weapons. And I'm including Denmark and Belgium. We wouldn't like it, but we wouldn't go to pieces about it the way we do when certain other countries get hold of nuclear weapons. Now, what are these? Now remember, we live in a society where anything that touches on race is verboten. The first thing you say is, that's racism, colonialism, imperialism, you're a Nazi, you want to kill 6 million Jews. So, but except in this case, if you have a picture in your mind of this tin pot little dictator or this dangerous fanatic, he is a man who has a color of skin which is not white. Let's make a little list here. What are the countries that we are afraid are going to handle atomic weapons irresponsibly? Well, certainly not Israel. Certainly not Britain. Certainly not France. Not the United States. We have in mind Iran, South Korea, China. We are terrified that some little African country will get hold of them. We were very happy at the bombing of the nuclear facility in Iraq. I hate to beat the point in, but the point is that if you made the list I just made, countries that just happen to be unready to have nuclear weapons, every single one of them is brown-skinned or yellow-skinned. In any other context, if that little coincidence occurred, all the organizations that are presently fighting nuclear proliferation would scream that you're a Nazi who wants to kill 6 million Jews. But non-proliferation, if anything else had the kind of racial statistics that we take for granted in this whole business of nuclear non-proliferation, it would be a racist thing. In fact, to sum it up, every single country that used to be called imperialists has the right to nuclear weapons. Every single one of their former colonies does not have the right to have nuclear weapons. And this, except in the present broadcast, is never referred to as colonialism. It is important for us to go over the reasons why no one else is going to refer to nuclear non-proliferation as a form of colonialism. Now, we all know that for decades, and today, the left has said that anyone who uses terms to oppose them, people who are anti-busing or people who are against racial quotas, these people are using code words for racism. When George Wallace ran in 1968 for president, he was the only candidate who attacked the wildly growing crime rate that was threatening the average American citizen. And his attacks were all dismissed as code words for racism. It was openly said that crime was a code word for racism, since the crime rate among blacks was 10 times that among whites. Today, when someone says, well, I have a business with 8 employees, they built up my business, I've had them with me for the last 10 years, they're making my little business a success, I really don't want to fire some of them and hire some new Hispanics or blacks. We all know the first thing everybody's going to say is, well, that's just a code for racism. He just wants to keep the white males on his payroll. But when it just so happens that our official policy is to be sure that all of the former of the countries that used to have colonies have atomic weapons, and all of the former colonies, are banned from having not only nuclear weapons but atomic energy plants, that is not ever referred to as a form of colonialism. The reason for this is that we have essentially an established religion with two heads, or established national commentary with two heads. One head is the liberal, the other is the respectable conservative. The criticism I came up with, in a free society, would be stated by the opposition. But we all know that nobody is more fanatically pro-Israel than the right, the respectable right, and that the so-called Christian conservatives are a wholly owned subsidiary of the Zionist movement. They believe that the Old Testament gives Israel to what we call the Jews, most of whom are not, of course, descended from the Jews. And of course, if you know your Old Testament, you know that the Jews took the Promised Land with a lot of bloodshed away from other people. And it has never been mentioned that maybe the Jews should give that land to the people they took it away from. And this sort of thing just doesn't come up. And, of course, a conservative who talks about things like this is not going to be invited back. He's not going to make a living in the media. The Christian conservatives will lynch him, and the liberals will be in the lynch mob. Actually, respectable conservatives lead the lynch mob against unrespectable conservatives. We all know this is a simple fact of life. Also, a respectable conservative, when it comes to the subject of race, is required, first and foremost, to grovel whenever racism or race is mentioned. He has to say, we opposed all of this wonderful civil rights legislation, and we're sorry, and please kick us in various tender parts of our body. This is the normal requirement for anyone to be a respectable conservative. So the last thing any respectable conservative is going to do is to accuse a liberal of being a racist. And certainly no conservative is going to say that nuclear non-proliferation is a code word for racism. Lord knows it meets every criterion a lot better than any of the statistics on how many black people are in prisons and so forth, because the black people in those prisons were convicted. But this sort of thing is simply not allowed, which is why you have Stormfront, which is why you have me, to point out this rather obvious fact. Something else every respectable conservative has to do, as we all know, is to agree that there is a race problem, and that this race problem will be solved by massive third world immigration into every white country, and only into white countries. Not only does he not call this racism, he has to agree that intermarriage, miscegenation, is the solution to the race problem. And, as a subtext, he always agrees that this race problem only exists in white countries. Now, if I were to say there is this race problem in the world, and this race problem requires that we pour non-blacks into every single black country in Africa, and incidentally, I would say we also need to pour non-blacks into Jamaica, Belize, and I would list, oddly enough, every black country on the face of this planet. Now, how long would it take anybody to say, you're not talking about a race problem, Bob. You are giving a final solution to the black problem. You, Bob, are a racist. And in fact, if I proposed a solution to the race problem like that, I would be a racist. Not only that, I would be advocating genocide. But when it just so happens that the whole world, and especially respectable conservatives, have to agree that the solution, that there is this race problem, and this, the solution to the so-called race problem is to make a multiracial society of every white country and only of white countries, and that the final solution to this race problem is to, quote, assimilate, unquote, the non-white Superian with the whites. It is never called racism. In fact, it is called anti-racism. Any racism, by any criterion, is a code word for anti-white. By any criterion, non-proliferation is largely, overwhelmingly, a matter of a new colonialism. These facts stand out so well that the policy of advocating them falls into the category of the big lie. The big lie is an old technique. It was there a long time before Hitler got blamed for it. It is just such a huge lie that you can't attack it. There's nowhere to start. How do you say to someone, you just advocated the end of the white race as your anti-racism, that is genocide? You can't even start there. You're not allowed to. We live in the big lie. And each generation has its big lie, and this is the big lie of our generation. But the words that I just said are a key to the difference between the way I approach the present big lie and the way younger people approach it. To me, this is just another big lie. The way you approach a big lie is that you keep saying logically that it is a big lie, and you don't let people get off the subject. I keep preaching that we need to say over and over and over that the present policy that all respectable conservatives have to agree with is that there is this race problem, and this race problem will be solved by massive immigration into the third world, into every white country, and only into white countries. And I add, if I were to say there is this race problem, and this race problem will be solved by pouring non-blacks into every non-black country, every black country, and only into black countries, and I would name a list of countries, and every one of them was a black country, it wouldn't take any reasonably intelligent person 5 seconds to realize that what I call being anti-racist is actually being anti-black. I point out to people, or I almost don't want to say this because the first point I made is the critical one. We have to call this genocide, and the person we are talking to always, and many people have tried it after I recommended it, and nobody has found the least problem in impressing the person they're talking to, and more importantly, the people who are listening to the discussion. So, really, what I would like to hear people do is to not let anyone off the hook. When you bring up this point about the solution to the race, there's this race problem, the solution to this race problem is massive immigration into white countries, all white countries, only white countries, and, quote, assimilation, unquote, or, quote, a melting pot, or, quote, a multicultural society. And then I add that if I said exactly the same thing, and I like to make it boring, I like to make it sound like I am talking to an idiot, because the other person does not want to sound, feel like an idiot. The worst thing you can do is give the other guy respect for a stupid statement. That's what respectable conservatives get paid for. So, repetition, and don't let him get you off of the subject. This tactic, since it is based on a very simple truth, and a very simple truth is the deadliest weapon against the big lie, you will find that the person you're talking to will react like a caterpillar in a frying pan. He will try desperately to get you off on something else. The best way to get you off on something else is to give you a chance to look smart. He will mention Israel, he will mention any number of subjects, and it will hit you that you know all about that subject, and you could really get off on that subject and tell him a lot of things about that subject. And one of the hardest things to overcome is ego. So, he is trying desperately to get you off the simple fact that he and all of the media and all the respectable conservatives are advocating a simple genocide. And if the same thing were said about black countries, everybody would know it was genocide. He has to get you off of that subject. Now you have to give up the chance to show how much you know about other subjects in order not to let that caterpillar get off of that frying pan. You have to keep coming back, staying on message, it's called. You have to keep coming back to the fact that, for example, if somebody says, well, doesn't that sound like Hitler? I just say, that's what they all say. When I talk about genocide against the white race, they call me a Nazi, who wants to kill 6 million Jews. I'm used to that. But what I want is an answer to the question I ask you, that I use the chance to repeat the entire thing again. I have done this 20 times, and nobody, not just the person I'm arguing with, but especially the people around him, is going to forget this fact that I have repeated to the point where everybody is sick of it, that the official answer to this so-called race problem is to pour the third world into every white country and only white countries, and to, quote, assimilate, unquote, them into a, quote, melting pot, unquote, or a, quote, multicultural society, unquote. And that is straight genocide. And then I hammer it home again that if one were to say that there was this race problem and say that the answer to this race problem was to pour non-blacks into each and every non-white, every black country on earth, and only into black countries, no intelligent person would take 5 seconds to realize that I was not being any racist, that any racist is a code word for anti-black. The cure has to do with the disease. The big lie is pushed by repetition. You fight the big lie by repetition. The big lie is spread by people who repeat it and repeat it, and they won't get off of it. The answer to it is solid spade work. Yes, we will break the big lie, but the people who are running around screaming about 800 different issues, when they don't hit the big lie itself, are not the ones who are going to do it. The people who are going to destroy the big lie are the ones who are determined to do just that. The truth, people are at least subconsciously aware that there's a big lie there somewhere. And the people who do the spade work, which is boring, it's work, will be the ones who destroy it. Meanwhile, everybody else can send each other frantic emails about how Bush lied or Iraq or whatever. These are perfectly legitimate subjects for discussion. Certainly, I don't mean for people to talk about nothing but the point I have made. But in order to destroy the big lie, before people can start questioning everything else, and they will, once you break the big lie, every conversation you have, the person you're talking to and the people who are listening have to go away sick of hearing you say this. And it's not going to give you a great reputation. Sometimes it does. People sometimes give you credit for it, but that's not really the point. Every conversation you have should have these simple points repeated, and in a half an hour conversation, you can repeat it 10 times. But every conversation, if we're going to get started breaking the big lie, you're going to have to do the spade work. Every political conversation you have is going to have to repeat and repeat and repeat the idea, the fact, not the idea, that what is called anti-racism is actually anti-white. This is Bob Whitaker in This is the Untrained Eye. I very much appreciate your listening, and I look forward to talking to you again next week.